This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PlayStation Pop Experience Season 1 of Loki is behind us, and we're here to break down that very interesting season finale. Talk about where it could go, where it's going to affect the MCU. Does Sylvie replace Star-Lord as the person's most pissed at for changing shit up? Who knows? Anyway, I am Andy Atherton, part of the crew here at Pop Goes to the Couch, and we are going to break down Season 1, Episode 6, For All Times, Always. And with me is the crew. Let's get him in here. Back from the void. He survived Eliath. Hopefully it's the Sean Kidd that we know, not a variant, but, you know, we don't know. But he's back. Sean Kidd, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Andy. And the good news about Sean Kidd is it doesn't matter what variant it is. You're always going to get the same Sean in all of them because he always changes it up. But good to be here tonight. I'm glad to be here for the finale.
All right, yes. Glad you could be here, because it wouldn't be the same without you. Also joining us is Scott Shiflett. What's going on, Scott?
Andy, I'm just glad all of us are able to be here, and hopefully, you know, we're the regular variant and not a different one.
What? Mind blown. And speaking of mind blowing, Tim Capel's here as well.
Well, while we're processing that, I will echo Scott's sentiments that I'm glad we're all here to get together for the finale, and I'm hoping that my takes tonight do not get me pruned.
Well, time will tell. Let's see. So, started off pretty great. Sean, though, before we get going, you weren't on the last episode. What were your thoughts going into the finale based on what you saw in episode 5?
Initially, I got main roster angry. It reminded me of Lost a little bit with the whole smoke monster, and I felt like they were kind of like in that, I guess, the void or whatever you call it. Reminded me of Lost, where all the dead people were kind of like waiting to go off. So I had a lot of Lost feels in it, but I did enjoy it. I did enjoy the variant Lokis. I thought it was a strong episode that leads us into what we're going into tonight. So definitely better than I thought some of the prior episodes were. I thought it set up nicely to what we're going to see in this episode tonight. So if I'd known this episode we got tonight was going to be directly coming out of what we saw the last episode, I thought it was kind of a nice 1-2 punch, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Kind of just leads right into the other. All right, so let's start off with this episode. Loki and Sylvie stand at a castle on the planetoid beyond the void. They approach the main doors, and Sylvie asks Loki if he thinks it's a bad idea if she kicks them in. He says that he doesn't think that, and if he asks if Sylvie is okay when she hesitates. Sylvie tells him that she needs a moment and that she's been waiting for this moment for her entire life and just needs a minute to get her head straight. The door is open. Loki and Sylvie go in. There is a vast hallway, and as they start to go down, Miss Minutes appears before them. She welcomes them to the Citadel at the end of time and says that he who remains is impressed. The AI says that he created all and controls all at the end of time. He wants to offer Loki and Sylvie a deal and has worked out so he can insert them back into the timeline in a way that won't disrupt things. Miss Minutes says that the TVA can keep doing its vital work, and Loki and Sylvie can live the lives that they've always wanted. Loki will be allowed to win against the Avengers, kill Thanos, and gain the Infinity Gauntlet and rule Asgard. Sylvie would have a lifetime of happy memories and the two Lokis together. Miss Manners assures them that he can make it work and they can have it all together. Sylvie said that it's a fiction, and Loki insists that they write their own destinies. Miss Manners wishes them good luck, disappears, and Loki and Sylvie continue on. So this was kind of we saw Miss Mitz try making the turn. I think she's full heel here, at least acting in the stead of he who remains. Sean, what'd you think of the beginning of this episode?
Yeah, Miss Mitz a little creepy here. You know what I liked about this opening? It shows us the growth of Loki, maybe both Lokis, but Loki was always in a position of where he wanted to win and beating the Avengers, getting the throne of Asgard, the Infinity Gauntlet was everything he ever wanted in life. And he's in a different place now because of this series and possibly meeting Sylvie where, you know what? No, I'm going to do the right thing at this point. I'm not going to be selfish and get what I want. Finally, I want to see this thing through. I want the TVA to go away and I want to meet the person that's in charge of all this. So for me, I thought this is a pretty pivotal Loki moment in terms of character growth. That's how I viewed it. But I liked it. I thought it was a pretty solid opening.
All right, Scott.
Yeah, I really enjoyed like the Miss Minutes thing that Tim alluded to last episode is 100% right with, you know, her working not for the TVA, but for, you know, he who remains. And like Sean said with Loki, like we had seen the character growth through all the movies and everything. But with this show, like, you know, his quote unquote character growth got sent back to square one. And to see how much he's grown is just amazing.
All right, Tim.
Yeah, I sort of like the subdued nature of this opening where they're like, oh, should we kick the doors in? And you're kind of expecting this big dramatic moment, and it's not at all. And I also wonder how many people bit on Miss Minutes turning up here. Is kind of like, oh, is this really all it is? Like, is she really the one behind all this? Like, is there, you know, in a way they did a kind of stealth swerve, I feel like, by inserting Miss Minutes into the opening minutes of this episode. But she gives us that name drop of He Who Remains, which is certainly an incredibly deep cut from the comics. I mean, we're talking like mid-70s Thor comics. Yeah, associated with the TVA, but who really saw that coming? I don't think we got a lot of fan theories or comic.book articles on He Who Remains. So intrigued, to say the least, here.
All right. One thing I failed to mention as I have the episode on, what'd you guys think of that Marvel open there with all the different quotes? Like, what was going through your head when you heard that? Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. That was kind of cool. I feel like it was a sort of a audio-visual representation of Loki and Sylvie kind of floating through the boom tube, so to speak. I know I'm crossing universes here, but
boom tube.
Yeah. How they, you know, it's this wild and wacky, wonderful, you know, journey into mystery, right? Following up on our previous episode, and now they're reaching the finish line, and I think that was just a way of kind of depicting the historical significance of what they are achieving here.
Okay. All right. Any of you guys, anything to add or?
No, I thought it kind of like Tim, I thought it was nice to kind of hear all the quotes and everything throughout the years of the movies. And I kind of related it to kind of like a timeline thing where they're just playing all these greatest hits throughout the timeline or whatever. So whatever you want to call it, I thought it was a cool opening. I liked it.
Yeah. I agree with these guys just with how, it was like the greatest hits, but also like, I'm not going to lie, I went down some rabbit holes to see if we were hearing any new voices to be heard in that. But that sadly appears to not be the case.
All right.
Maybe you could look at it as the end of the old timeline and move into the next one kind of scenario. Oh. Maybe it's kind of a recap. Knowing what we know coming out of the end of this, maybe that's what that was for.
Could be.
I do like the idea, though, of like, you know, we certainly have our legitimate historical figures, and you had quotes from these, you know, you had like the Neil Armstrong thing in there, and also, you know, fictional characters as well. But it totally tracks that within the MCU that, you know, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, whoever would kind of be celebrities or historical figures on par with a lot of our actual historical figures. So it was just sort of a neat touch.
Mm-hmm. All right. So continuing on at the TVA, Ravonna is in her office collecting her files. Miss Manners appears and says that she's downloading the files that Ravonna needs. Ravonna confirms that the files aren't what she asked for. And Miss Minutes says that he thinks the files Ravonna will be more useful. With that, she disappears. Loki and Sylvie reach a chamber covered in dust, and the door opposite where they come in opens and reveals he's amused and impressed that there are two Lokis there, and he says the name Miss Manners gave him is a creep, but he likes it. It's creepy, but he likes it. They take the elevator up to his office, and he assures them that he's flesh and blood. Sylvie swings at he with the sword. He disappears before she can hit him. He reappears, then disappears chuckling before Sylvie can hit him. The elevator arrives at his office, and the Lokis find he waiting for them. He pours coffee and invites both of them to take a seat, and they hesitantly sit down. All right, so Scott, what do you think of the reveal here with
You know, it's not who we initially think it is. That will be later in the episode, but it's very creepy. I did, I knew exactly where it was from the beginning because I already knew, had known that Jonathan Majors had been cast as Kang in Ant-Man Quantumania. But they do a nice little twist here with, as we'll get to, with him being one of the variants. And the other thing is with Ravonna, because we don't see much of her in this episode. I, you know, thought we would meet her doom in this episode, but that's not the case. But it's interesting to see where what happens with these files, because spoiler alert, that really isn't followed up with anymore in this episode. So it's like a dangling plot line for season two.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tim.
Oh, man. So this, I mean, I kind of didn't think they would go there. Just because I feel like I've gotten somewhat into a rut here with these MCU Disney Plus shows of being let down in our finales, where, you know, no matter how good or bad the show itself had been up to that point, I think up till here we maybe had some qualms about their ability to stick the landing, or at least certainly I did. And I'd been down on Loki more so than any of the other shows. So going into the finale, I just kind of thought they're going to do like the most obvious, the most boring thing. And boy, did they subvert my expectations here with this grand reveal of Jonathan Majors, who it's sort of like, if you know, you know. And they totally do that thing that I was kind of wanting them to do of having... I mean, I guess I'll just go ahead and say it, like Kang without actually doing Kang, where he's not named. That name never comes up, is never mentioned in this episode. But again, those who are in the know kind of see where this is going, and it allows them to introduce the character without sort of overwhelming people, right? For all intents and purposes, this is a new character. This is somebody who's portrayed by an actor that people might be familiar with and who may enjoy very much. But is he connected to anything else? Well, if you don't know anything about Kang, if you don't know anything about the casting of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, then it really doesn't mean that much. But it's kind of allowed them to connect the dots in a clever way here. I think I talked about... You know, maybe we'd get not Kang, but Immortus, who's, you know, basically a variant of Kang, a future Kang, future version of Kang. And this just sort of feels like a mashup of Immortus and, you know, this character, He Who Remains, just sort of consolidating these characters, consolidating these concepts, as the MCU often does, to very good effect. And we get enough visual motifs to kind of tip us off that that's what they're doing. You know, certainly the purple cloak very much evokes Immortus. But he's sort of Kang. He's sort of Immortus in appearance, if not name. And that's sort of good enough for me. I was on board with this.
All right, Sean.
Yeah, you know, I'm like with Tim. I was pleasantly surprised at this outcome because... Like Tim said, other Marvel shows, we got especially WandaVision. We're like, ah, you know, we're going to get this big grand reveal. It's going to be Mephisto. And, you know, then, okay, all right, we got it in a Winter Soldier. We're like, ah, all right. So I thought for sure, like, I thought maybe Miss Minutes was behind it. It was going to be some kind of this, a variant Loki, I think we brought up, could be behind this. And I was really surprised. And I love the way they did it, like Tim said, with the He Who Remains. And not necessarily coming out and calling him Kang and that he's a variant. I thought that was fantastic. And I thought it was nice to get a nice little swerve here from Marvel on something that they've done a nice job of dragging this along and teasing us. And I was really happy to get this payoff. I really, really did like it. And as far as Ravonna, I really don't care where she goes. Get the hell off my TV. I hope she never comes back because I don't like her. I'm sure that's not the last we'll see of her. I'm sure we will again. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought Majors was really, really good in the part as well. I know we're going to hear more about what he does and what he says, but I thought he was great. My wife, when she watched it, was like, well, he's not really impressive as a villain. And I go, oh, you wait. And then they kind of play it out that he's the variant and there's much more evil ones out there, which, you know, kind of gets the juices flowing a little bit for the future. So, yeah, definitely good stuff.
All right. Mobius enters Ravonna's office, and she figures that if anyone could make it back from the void, it would be Mobius. She says that she pruned Mobius because she couldn't let him get in the way of her mission, and says that it can't be for nothing. Ravonna calls in a hunter, and Mobius tells her that it won't work now that they know her secret. Mobius' former friend wonders what he's done. In Fremont, Ohio in 2018, hunters pursue B-15 through a school. B-15 goes into an office, and a hunter corners her. She tells him that he has to listen to her, but he refuses. The principal, whose office comes in, wonders what's going on. She looks just like Ravonna, and B-15 tells the hunter that the principal isn't Ravonna, and they have a lot to talk about. So we get what happens with Ravonna, with a little bit of her backstory. Tim, what do you think of this short little part here?
Okay, I didn't entirely understand this scene at first, and it's because I had forgotten the detail that
I came up with. That I found that on that one episode we were recording, and I was watching it, and I did that deep dive on that high school.
Yeah. Well, my problem was not so much the high school, not so much Ravonna as the principal, but I had sort of forgotten that the TVA agents didn't know that they were all variants, which is a pretty big detail to forget, I'll grant you.
Yeah.
But in my defense, I don't know that the show really emphasized or underlined that point as hard as they maybe could have or should have. But from what I gather, this was basically just B-15 leading her colleagues on this little jaunt into the past to show them, hey, look, here's our boss. But it's not our boss. She's just a random principal lady. So guess what? Point proven, we're all variants. How do you feel about that? And we sort of leave it at that. This is another setup for season two, it feels like. We don't really get a proper follow-up here. And as far as Ravonna's departure earlier, I mean, we know that, well, some of us know that she is basically Kang's girlfriend in the comics. And he who remains is giving her information via Miss Minutes that he believes she will find to be much more of interest than what she actually requested. So they're kind of basically passing notes in class, it feels like, these two characters. And I imagine they're going to hook up and come together in the second season. And much like the Gatekeeper and the Keymaster and Ghostbusters, that is going to be very, very bad. So we're going to have to monitor that for the sake of all existence heading into Loki season two. But I gather that, unfortunately for Sean, we have not seen the last of Ravonna, and she remains dedicated to the cause. And she's going to have a real big lady boner for he who remains /Kang/Immortus, whoever, because that is the only person who seems to actually possess free will within the multiverse and imposes that will across the multiverse. And she wants to get in on that action, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sean?
Yeah, I mean, kind of the same. I know we're going to see her again, obviously, because yeah, I am one of the ones that know that is his girlfriend. But I just haven't liked the character this season. I guess that's meant not to like her. I guess that's the whole point of it. But, yeah, I mean, simple. And then, you know, also to Tim's point, you know, Hunter B-15 takes him back to the high school just to kind of show the guards, you know, prove to them, hey, that, you know, she's a variant and we're all variants, and try to prove a point. And again, like you, Tim said, it is a dangling plot line to go into season two. So not much of the scene wasn't followed up on. And in the grand scheme of things of this finale, didn't really add anything, I would say, to the end of the finale, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we get Ravonna a little bit more in the episode.
Yeah.
But Scott, what do you think of this short scene?
Yeah, just what the other guy said, like the big scene with, like, you know, the high school, and we see Ravonna was a principal, and I guess she had went there to visit her other variant. That's why, like, the pen was there. It's basically going to be a follow-up with the second season.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Loki tells he that he's lost, and Sylvie comes at he teleports out of reach of Sylvie and takes out a script of what they said and done and will do, after assuring them that he knows that they don't kill him, and he has programmed his temp pad with that knowledge. He says that he knows everything they've done and that he paved the road so that they would get where they are. He shows them more pages saying that there's only one way it can go. When Sylvie wonders why they're there, he says it's all about the journey. Loki figures that it's a manipulation, and he finds it interesting that Loki would consider it manipulation. He asks Sylvie if she trusts Loki, or that she thinks she could trust anyone at all. Ravonna, back at the TVA, Ravonna insists to Mobius that the TVA is a necessary lie, and she believes whoever created the TVA had a reason. She insists that they have to prune the timeline to prevent chaos, and that only the person in charge has free will. Mobius accuses Ravonna of betraying him. Ravonna tells him that he betrayed her. He turned to the variants, throwing away their friendship. Ravonna creates a portal and says that she's doing what she has to do. Mobius turns on his pruning rod, and Ravonna tells him that he's no longer a danger to her. He stabs at her, and Ravonna blocks his blow, disarms him, and kicks him to the floor. Mobius tells Ravonna to prune him. She deactivates the rod instead, grabs her bag, and tells Mobius that she's going in search of free will and leaves through the portal. All right, so Sean, this is where Ravonna kind of makes her exit till season two, or who knows, she could show up somewhere else. I don't know where, but you know, that's
well. I think we might. I mean, I'm sure she'll show up in later. I'm trying to figure out what the timeline. When does the Ant-Man movie come out?
Oh, 2022.
All right, but there, but maybe we could. But
23,
we
might, isn't it?
Yeah, 23.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
But we might see her in the multiverse movie with Doctor Strange, because if Kang's part of that, which I assume he's going to be, you know, and I know he said they're the main villain in Ant-Man, but I just don't know how that plays out where he's the main villain in Ant-Man and we don't see him again till then. I don't know if that makes any sense to me, but yeah, I'm sure there's a bigger, larger story at play for her, and that might just play out in the next season, and I might be overthinking it, but. She did punk out Mobius a little bit there, I thought, at the end, where she just kind of treated him like a bitch and just swatted him down and then left. But, yeah, I mean, nice scene. She's on her way. Probably sets up another thread for season two, I guess.
Yeah, sorry. Excuse me.
Oh, my Scott. God. Are you okay, Andy?
Yeah. I got to stop drinking.
Frog Thor did a run in.
Chris Hemsworth making an appearance.
I must be full. Sorry. Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, the scene where, like, Loki and Sylvie seeing that everything's been written out for them, like, Loki believes it, you know, Loki thinks it's a manipulation, and Sylvie just doesn't trust, like, anyone, it appears. Like, it appears their relationship is framed in front of our eyes, which is kind of sad. With the Ravonna thing, you know, Mobius gets jobbed out here pretty quick, and as we said, like, Mobius, Ravonna leaves, you know, with her season two plot line, or possibly, I think she's going to show up in the Spider-Man movie. That's what I think. But we'll get to that later, I'm sure. But yeah, just Loki and Sylvie just coming apart after, you know, they had that tender moment last episode. I know they'll get to a romantic scene here, which was kind of icky. But yeah, there's no free will, it appears, which is very interesting.
Tim?
Well, yes, this is where we get Ravonna's departure, and she's going in search of free will. And there's no free will in the multiverse, according to the TVA. Everything is happening as it's ordained, else it gets pruned. Then the ultimate authority, the ultimate free will, is, of course, as I mentioned, He Who Remains. That is who she's going in search of. You know, guys, based on how this episode ultimately ends, which we'll get to, she may not be too happy with what she finds, right?
Oh, 100%. She's going to be pissed. Or, you know, it may be a different her, as we saw with...
It may be a different her, or maybe she finds someone else, not where we leave things at the end of this episode. Lots of possibilities still open. I'm kind of not counting on seeing her again in any of these other film projects. I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's an organic connection there. Is someone being murdered in the background? Okay.
All right.
I don't know that we'll see her again until maybe the next season of Loki, but that's okay. You know,
she kind of feels like the TV character, not a movie character to me. You know what I mean? She kind of just feels like,
you know, you kind of said it. Yeah, yeah, that's sort of what I was dancing around, I feel like. I mean, I do like the character, and I really like the actress. I've really been in love with her since, like, that one episode of Black Mirror that was so good several years ago. But anyway, she does feel more like a TV character, really. And as far as Kang, He Who Remains, whatever, like, I feel like the world, everything, all possibilities are open as far as how his story is going to play out. You know, you might see another Thanos situation where it's like kind of a constant threat that is emphasized throughout the films, but you don't necessarily see him all too often. So, yeah, there's just so much setup here coming out of this one, not just this series, but this finale, really.
Yeah, and Jonathan Majors is just chewing up the scenery. Mm-hmm. He just has so much fun, and he's going
to
be.
I'll have more to say on that, certainly.
He definitely hits his groove here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically the ground running, like, from, like, he doesn't need to ramp up. He's there. I mean, although probably, you know, might have to play some variants differently, I guess. I don't know, depending on.
But he hooked me right away. Immediately, within the first minute of him being on the screen, I was like, oh, he's going to be really good in this role. Mm-hmm. I really liked him.
Yeah. All right. So back in the Citadel, he admits that his methods are deceptive, but without the TVA, everything burns. Loki asks what he is afraid of, and he says that he is afraid of himself. Sylvie wonders who he is, and he tells him that it's not as simple as a name. He explains that a variant of himself once lived in the 31st century and discovered that there were other versions. Others, he learned the same thing, made contact for a while. There was peace as they shared technology and knowledge. Some he's weren't so pure of heart and became conquerors. Each variant fought to preserve his universe and annihilate the others. The first variant encountered a creature capable of to consume time and space, Eliath. He weaponized Eliath and ended the multiversal war, isolated their timeline, and prevented any other branches by creating the TVA. He said he keeps them safe, and if they want to see evil, then they should meet his variants. Their host tells them that something worse will replace him if they dispose of him, and the TVA is the only scenario that works. Sylvie suggests that he is a liar and he tells them that if they kill him, they'll have to deal with an infinite number of variants, or they run the place. Loki wonders why he would give up being in control. He says that he's tired and older than he looks, and he says the game is for the young and hungry, and the persons best suited to take his place are Loki and Sylvie. They could take over and return to the TVA as benevolent rulers. Sylvie accuses him of treating people as pawns, and he says that it was practical, not personal. When she tells him that it was personal to him, to her, he calls her a murderer and a hypocrite, and that they're all villains. He says now that they can do horrific things for a good reason. Thunder rumbles and lights dim. He says that they just crossed the threshold. He says that he doesn't know how everything is going to go, and they've reached a point where his knowledge of the future ends. Outside, the timeline starts branching. So this is a lot to take in. Scott, what do you think of this part with the reveal of all the variants and the variant war, I guess?
So if there was any doubt of him not being a Kang variant, the 31st century was a dead ringer with the comics. I personally think the way he explained the other multiverses and why, like, we haven't seen anything else and now we may see stuff was actually pretty easy to get. I'm not sure how the others feel on this, but I felt like they went a very rudimentary way of saying that. And it's, you know, it's weird that he wants to get out and he wants to give them all to Loki and Sylvie. And then we're starting to see, I love like how he was acting, and he's like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen now. And it was just great. It was like, it felt like, you know, the way Majors was acting was that he was just toying with them and they didn't know what to believe, which makes this so much better. This is like, I've enjoyed the season more than I believe Sean and Tim has, but I think this was like the best, like 20 minute stretch of the season so far.
All right. Tim.
Yeah, I kind of weirdly would agree with what Scott said. That, I mean, this is like a 20 minute info dump of just pure exposition. It absolutely should not work. Like this is the type of thing that should like fall on its face, right? This should be like a chore to get through. But this is where I want to talk about Jonathan Majors' performance, because he makes it so palatable. Like, he walks right up to that edge of really overacting and becoming obnoxious, but he kind of knows where the line is and not to step over in a way that, you know, it's very captivating. It's still very watchable. You're glued to the screen watching his performance. But you're not turned off by it at the same time. It doesn't go so over the top that you can no longer pay attention to what he's saying, the information he's conveying. That is, and that's got to go against, you know, your instincts as an actor. I can't say I have any instincts as an actor, but I just imagine that handed this to work with, you would be like, okay, so play to the cheap seats, right? That's probably the best way to do this, but he's got to get all of this exposition over and got to get it across in a way that makes sense to people without, you know, alienating them at the same time. Because there's some really just geeky pseudoscience stuff going on here, right? I mean, it's asking a lot of its audience. Certainly its wider audience. But I thought that Jonathan Majors really threaded that needle so delicately, and it's a tour de force here, and I just can't wait to see more from him, just based on the potential that he is represented here in this episode. But yeah, as far as that info dump that we get, I know I've been very critical of like how the rules of the TVA and the sacred timeline and the variants and just how all of this works. It's felt very like inconsistent and sort of slapdash, but knowing that it's sort of all been at the whims of He Who Remains, and the TVA are like very unreliable caretakers at the end of the day, like any information that's come from them has been very suspect, and for good reason. It sort of smoothed over some of those wrinkles, some of those issues I had with this series and earlier episodes, where it's like, okay, well, basically these variants are just sort of occurring at random. It doesn't have to have some kind of external causality to it, and they're just, you know, if that is in some way against the whims of He Who Remains, they're going to be on it, go out there and reset the timeline, prune that branch. But these things just kind of happen at random. And yeah, there is this sacred timeline, but they do sort of allow, it seems like they do sort of allow things to run amok in certain cases if it doesn't interfere with whatever the design of the creator is. And I'm kind of on board with that. And I like that this sort of the crux of his whole speech here is giving Loki and Sylvie a choice, you know, and it's basically replacing a lot of the metaphysics that are hard to wrap your brain around sometimes with some philosophy, some thought experiment, which is sort of fun to me anyway. Will they take the option to, you know, essentially just replace him, to take over, allow him to enjoy a happy retirement, or will they kill him and unleash, you know, the violence of the multiverse, which, and can he be trusted that he's even telling the truth about that? So I love just how all these possibilities are wrapped up into this one scene. And I do wonder how this plays out for people who have sort of, unlike me, really enjoyed the show up until this episode. And they're kind of going, what the hell is all this crap, right? Like, this kind of salvaged the show for me, salvaged the series to date. And I think for a lot of people, it's just sort of a big, huh, this is not what this show was leading up to. So it shouldn't work, but it really does work for me.
All right. Sean?
You know, I've been very critical about, and probably vocal about, my hate for time travel and all the other bullshit, because in comics, It gets very convoluted and confusing. And I think Tim said it well. I thought it was simplistic here. I think the explanation made sense. I wasn't confused at all about the different timelines. I thought the story of the variant Kangs or variants that he's talking about were fantastic. And I think the other thing I really liked, it gives Jonathan Majors potential. I guess that's his name, Jonathan Majors. Gives him potential to play different variants of this character he's in now. And we could see multiple different ones that he gets to play, which he had me captivated. Like, his whole story, like Tim said, it shouldn't have worked. But the whole story, the way he owned the screen, the way he just carried it, it was captivating. And again, I can't wait to see more of him, and I can't wait to see what he does with this character in different stages of who the character is. I think he's going to be really good at this. And I really, really, truly love the swerve that this is not actually Kang, but a variant of Kang that and ultimately he's trying to save the timeline. Actually, it sounds like he's trying to do the right thing. But at the same time, he's kind of riding that edge of, you know, we're all villains. I'm not a good guy. He just kind of rides that line a little bit. I love it. But yeah, I'm a big, big fan of this casting, and he totally captivated the screen for me for these 20 minutes. And to Tim's point, it should not have worked, but it did, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his delivery of these lines and everything, it just shows that his range of an actor and what we're going to see from this guy and you know, going forward is going to be incredible to watch.
But it also, for me personally, what it did, it makes me not worried that we're going to get into a whole bunch of time travel bullshit and it's going to suck, because he made it understanding. It made it very clear and easy to understand from a movie standpoint that if you don't read comics, you're still going to understand what's happening. And for me, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Just to jump in there, I think we've both kind of harped on the fact or the opinion in previous episodes that Kang is like a big time player who sucks as a character. Like, he just really is a shit character. In my mind, like, there's just not been really many good Kang stories, at least from the comics. But
I remember, sorry to cut you off, Tim. I asked you guys, I was like, what Kang comic should I read? And Sean's response was, oh, you've already seen it with the Loki show.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think I had a few half-hearted suggestions. But get a performer of Jonathan Majors caliber behind this character in whatever form he takes, however many variants we're going to see of that. And I have a lot more confidence in the MCU's ability to do what the comics could not and make this a really compelling villain.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. So Loki wonders if that's it, and wonders if he is going to let them decide his fate. He tells him that he is, and either they let him live or they kill him, and another variant of him takes his place. Sylvie thinks he's lying to them, and he says that it's no lie. Sylvie lunges at him, and Loki stops her and says that they should talk about it. Loki pulls her back with his magic and parries her blow when she swings at him. He says that he's a liar and doesn't think he is lying. Sylvie figures that Loki wants he's thrown. This is confusing with all these he's near. And Loki wonders if it will unleash something worse by killing he. Loki insists that it's not about a throne, but Sylvie calls herself a fool for ever trusting Loki. Loki figures that Sylvie never trusted him, and what's going on is bigger than their experience. When Sylvie wonders why they're not seeing it the same way, Loki tells her that she can trust him and he can't be trusted. Loki wants to wait, and Sylvie attacks him with his sword and he defends himself. Sylvie tells Loki to kill her and take his throne, then kicks him when he refuses. They continue fighting, and Loki teleports in front of her blade and drops his own sword as she prepares to kill him. Loki asks Sylvie to stop and says that he feels that what she feels and where they have as she has been. All he knows is that he just wants Sylvie to be okay. Sylvie drops her sword and they kiss, and then Sylvie tells Loki that she's not him, opens the portal and shoves Loki through it back to a theater in the TVA. Sylvie closes the portal before Loki can come back through, and she asks he if he's going to beg for his life. He doesn't, and Sylvie runs her sword or dagger through his chest. He dies and nothing happens. Sylvie collapses to the floor in exhaustion and despair. Outside, the timeline continues branching. All right, Tim, there was a lot going on with two Lokis there. What do you make of this part?
Okay, so when I say that this shouldn't work, this whole sequence, and in a lot of ways this entire episode, it shouldn't work, this is where I feel like you can make the argument that it doesn't work, because it really kind of takes the focus off of Loki slash the Lokis, if you want to consider Sylvie a co-lead at this point, which I think is kind of deserved. They are faced with having to make this decision here. Yes, they're, you know, Loki is like still our protagonist, but they're kind of given very little to do, right? So I think for a lot of people, it's just sort of, you know, you've followed these characters, you've potentially fallen in love with these characters, and you're like, this is it, really? So I do sort of sympathize with people who have been watching the show from that perspective and do feel that way. But I guess in a selfish sense, I am not one of them. So here again, this all just really works for me. Delving more into the philosophy of this dilemma that He Who Remains has presented our fearless heroes with, what I wonder is, if he doesn't know how the rest of the story is written, not because they are at the end of time, which, yes, they are, but why should that matter as long as he's still in charge and as long as he's still running things? I wonder if he doesn't know because that's confirmation that they are going to kill him. Hence, there's still kind of no free will, right? It's a real mind bender, you know?
I think he was going to be killed either way. Like, for them to like take over for him, they would have to kill him. So I think he knew it was either two options. That's the way I took it.
I could see that too. Yeah, he's got to die either way. There's easy way or hard way, right? There's the messy unleash chaos, or the more controlled chaos manner that he was presenting to them, where, you know, you can kind of have any. You could have your heart's desire, basically, but you've got to keep the trains running on time, just like I've been doing for so long, for forever, essentially. So I could see that too, where he's dying either way, but that's why he doesn't know how the story ends. Whether he's going to be killed at the hands of Sylvie or Loki, or, you know, he fades off into the sunset, whatever. He just doesn't know at this point. But obviously he's out of the picture. So, you know, that I think is very telling. And I wonder if we're going to have to do something to reverse this decision that Sylvie makes in order to undo some of this madness that...
I don't think the genie goes back in the bottle.
You don't think the toothpaste goes back in the tube, huh?
Andy, I don't know if you want to talk about it now, but I just thinking on the spot here. I think MCU is going to somehow, this is how the Venom, Spider-Man, Sony universe is going to work. I think this is how like all the other quote unquote movies before are going to be considered canon. Mm-hmm. Especially if the rumors are true. That's not me this time. Especially if the rumors are true about the Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield Spider-Man showing up in the new Spider-Man movie. I'm just spitballing.
Like branching off the pod. It's
sorry.
Like branching off in Loki. Jeez.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't say I haven't thought along the same lines here. And it would be sort of... I don't know, sending the wrong message to just sort of hit the reset button, right? To say, well, there's no free will in the universe, but in the multiverse, but the best thing, the closest thing, the best of all bad options we had was this guy running everything, right? Like this benevolent dictator, basically. I don't think that's really the MCU's style. But yeah, certainly that's a pivotal decision that Sylvie makes here. Basically kicks our Loki out of the time stream here. So he doesn't have a whole lot of agency here in this finale, which again may bother some people, but I'm kind of fine with. But yeah, there's a lot to process coming out of that scene of just watching He Who Remains lying dead and all these, you know, Nexus events occurring seemingly at random with no one to oversee them. So this may very well be the multiverse of madness that we're going to be looking at pretty soon here in, you know, that Doctor Strange sequel.
All right. Sean.
Yeah, I 100% believe this is leading to the multiverse. I agree with Scott on the Spider-Man stuff. I also believe, whether we want it to be or not, this is how they're going to introduce the X-Men and Fantastic Four. I think this is going to bridge off from all of this.
And that's where I will stop watching.
Well, it's true. And I knew Tim was going to say that because I think when we talked about this early on and we said all this multiverse, this is how they're going to bring all these other people in. You were like, that would be the easiest way to do it, and I would hate it, and I would quit watching it. And unfortunately, Tim, I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, here's my thing. I would be fine if they use it as a way of acknowledging, yeah, here's these other X-Men movies where some shit happened. Like, we'll just call that a multiverse at this point. If you want to give that a nod, I'm cool with it. But if they're trying to use that as a backdoor into, well, this is how we do mutants now. They're from a multiverse. It's like,
yeah,
it really misses the entire point and the entire appeal. I can't see them misfiring that badly on one of their core concepts, but.
Well, Tim, it could all be a swerve too. Like they would expect us to think that's what they're going to do. And then Marvel could be what it does best to swerve us too. But I do think that some kind of ramification of what comes out of this is going to lead to all that coming together at some point based on what we see coming out of this. I really do.
It's just, I guess my whole thing is there's no need to do that in order to introduce mutants into the MCU. Like, yeah, you could have multiversal variants of whatever they end up doing, but there's no need to say, well, you know, the only way that we can have X-Men and all the X-Men characters is if they come in from another universe. It's like, well, no, not really. You can just do them in the same universe we've always followed.
I agree with you 100%. I just don't think that's the way they're going to do it. And I could be totally wrong. But
and also, speaking of this, isn't Kang's name Nathaniel Richards? Is he like a distant relative of Reed? Maybe this is how we get Fantastic
He's well, they've been real cagey about it in the comics.
Like the third Summers brother.
Yeah, come on, don't give me that kind of catnip now. Yeah, I mean, either way, he's either a descendant of Reed's father, whose name is Nathaniel Richards. So literally, they have the same name, not the same character, but. They do share the same name. Reed's dad is a time traveler, so it's kind of like do the math. Or he may just be a descendant of Reed himself, you know, many years into the future. The fact that, you know, Kang hails from the 31st century gives you a lot of leeway there, a lot of rope. But yeah, in some form or fashion, he is definitely connected to the Richards family. Some would say even connected to the Von Doom family. There was some, Sean, you might want to help me out. Wasn't there some suggestion way early Marvel Comics that Kang was maybe a future Doctor Doom?
Correct. Yes.
You know.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. But yeah, this is what comics do. They get overcomplicated. And I'm praying that Marvel doesn't do this to us in the movies. One thing I will add, and I'm sorry to burst your bubble about that, Tim, but I really do think that's where it's going to go. And I won't die. I won't die on that cross. I'm just saying that's what it's looking like. The other thing I would say is Loki's, this whole setup of the series was Loki is always potentially a loser making the wrong decisions, right? And I feel like Sophie making the decision to kill Kang or this very he who remains is just classic Loki making the wrong decision. And again, once again, causing a bunch of chaos. So it's not like her making that decision really is out of the realm of what a Loki would do. So yeah. That's kind of my point with that as well.
In the same way that it's kind of Loki's fault that Thanos happened, right?
Correct. So they constantly make the wrong decision, and now it's just the variant Loki making the wrong decision while the other Loki tries to talk her out of it.
It's kind of Loki's fault that Ultron was unleashed, right?
Exactly. So it just kind of runs the theme of what Loki's do, and I think it's pretty cool. Like, if this ends up, if this episode ends up, and Andy, then I'll go back to you, sorry. If this ends up with the timelines being split and everything going to the multiverse based on this episode of this series, then this made the Loki series and all the Disney Plus series, this made it for me, because this is really something you have to watch to understand what's going to happen in the movies. And that's really what I've been dying to see in one of these TV series, and I feel like I finally got it.
So. Agreed.
All right, Andy. All right.
Scott. Oh, I'm just going to pass to Scott, who's she's jumping the line. God damn
it. I know. I'm the worst. I will say... Sorry, Andy. I think last question, last episode, I started asking Tim questions, taking your job. I'm sorry, man.
I like it. I'm
going to put you in timeout one of these days.
I love it.
I actually didn't.
It's not on the format, Andy.
I know. If it's not on the format, God damn it, you can't fit.
Sorry, it just popped in my head.
Like another co-host of ours in the background taking my, like, just, you know what, just you do everything. You do the whole job. Go ahead. Yeah, it's all yours now.
Doesn't work for me, brother.
Scott over here like Goldberg not cooperating for the power bomb here.
Not going up, brother. Not in the contract. I enjoyed the fight scene. Damn it. I enjoyed the fight scene. I think I might be the only one. Did not want that kiss, as I've already said my issues with that. But it was a fun little fight scene, and Loki was willing to sacrifice his life for Sylvie, which, you know, shows how much character growth we've gotten out of him in 6 episodes since all the character growth was done before. I just want to get to the end and talk about what the hell we think is going on. So, Andy,
didn't you already do that?
A little bit, but trust me, there's a lot more. I think after I saw that episode,
I will say I love
3 paragraphs.
I love how, like, none of us talked about the kiss except Scott. Like, Scott paid it some lip service, no pun intended. But
I don't sold it.
we're just like, whatever. Like,
wasn't needed.
It's still just I don't see them as I just don't see it.
It's like fucking yourself. Like, it's weird. Come on.
Yeah, it's
Jesus Christ.
I can't. Yeah, I can't with that.
Okay, so at the TVA, Mobius and B-15 monitor the branching timeline. They recite the TVA's oath. Loki sits in the theater and mourns. He then gets up, goes out, and finds the hunters mobilizing. Loki finds Mobius and B-15 discussing the branching, and Loki yells that they can't stop it. He explains what happened to Mobius, and different variants of a dangerous person are coming. Mobius has no idea who Loki is because of all the alterations on the timeline. Loki looks up at the statue of He that has replaced the statues of the Timekeepers, and that's where the episode ends. So, Sean, what'd you think of this button at the end of the episode?
I like the ending. Obviously, Loki is in a different variant timeline or whatever where they don't know who he is. That's my assumption in that. I thought it was a nice way to wrap the series up to really let us know, oh, shit, it's about to hit the fan. I love the visuals of the timelines branching off. I do 100%, like Scott said, I do believe this is definitely going to lead us to the next the Spider-Man. I think the one reason why we have not seen the Spider-Man trailer yet is because they were waiting for this show to air. To kind of make it all make sense. And if the rumors are true, we've heard a lot of rumors about all the past Spider-Mans, and we already know some of the past villains, like Norman Osborn and Dr. Octopus, Electro, all of them are going to be in the next Spider-Man movie. So this is obviously going to be a branch off. And this kind of sets the stage for what's coming to Marvel in the future in the movie. So it's pretty exciting, I think.
All right, Scott.
I love the last part where Loki's like trying to talk to Mobius, and Mobius goes, are you one of the other like accountants or something? He doesn't say accountant, but it's like
analyst
or something. And Loki's like, oh shit, what has happened? And then all you see is it just goes straight to, you know, the shot of what we know is Kang. So it's,
yep.
It was awesome.
Tim.
yeah, as much as I've talked about how he remains sort of evokes visually that image of a Mortis or of Kang, this statue now in this new version of the TVA, there's no question that is Kang to a T. And I love the urgency that Loki just sort of presents Mobius with, like, where he's just like, oh my God, I made it back. You know, this is, he feels like this is his last hope in the world now, that maybe these guys can still do something to avert this impending calamity. And Mobius is like, who are you? And Loki is talking about how, you know, he saw the ultimate, the man behind the curtain, and he was terrifying. He used that word, terrifying. And it reminded me a lot of, you know, I guess how Thanos was set up in Infinity War, where you had Banner basically being sent to the Sanctum Sanctorum and is, you know, greeting Tony and Doctor Strange with that same urgency, right? And they're all just kind of in the dark. So that's where we leave things here. And Sean, you sort of answered a question I was going to ask. So do we think this is a variant TVA, like he's been shunted back to another?
I do, yes.
See, I was more of the impression that it was almost like because He Who Remains was killed, whoever took his place as he foretold, basically. We haven't seen that person yet. Obviously, it's going to be very scary once that reveal does come. I think that person basically created a different version of the TVA. Mm. This is like a reset that they've pressed the reset button from the very beginning, from the inception of the TVA's creation.
Mm.
Because I think, in my mind, it only sort of works that there's one iteration of the TVA. Like, different timelines should not have their own TVA. Otherwise, what's the point, right?
Oh, so what you're saying, it's a reset kind of
thing. It's a reset.
I could buy that, too. I could buy that.
And that's kind of what I was thinking. And I could be wrong, and I'm fine with being wrong, honestly. It's just sort of like, in my head, it's like, why would there be different versions of them when they're kind of the ultimate authority on what version of whatever timeline should prevail? You know, it seems like they get their signals crossed too much, right?
Makes sense.
So I think that a big reset button has been hit, and yeah, we're seeing a totally overhauled TVA. We're going to be following a lot of the same characters. Hell, we might see another version of Ravonna, who did not split and go looking for her future boyfriend, Kang, right? Which would be kind of in keeping with the comics, too. So, yeah, that all feels like set up for season two. My sincere hope at the end of the day is that the MCU, that Kevin Feige, that whoever understands that the multiverse is basically a gimmick to be exploited, a gimmick to have some fun with. Let's use like this next Spider-Man movie to play in that sandbox, by all means. Doctor Strange also, but let's not lean on it maybe too heavily and become dependent on this. You know what I mean? Where this is now your sort of singular source of storytelling, and that's the well you're drawing all of your ideas from. This is just sort of a fun diversion we can do.
So I have a question.
Let's not give up on telling actual creative stories with a consistent through line, I guess.
So at the end of the last Spider-Man movie, you clearly, J. Jonah Jameson from the other Spidey universe is already there, right?
No, I think they're just reusing the same actor, and this is just MCU Jonah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay.
I mean, could be wrong here again, but it's just, again, that would be a weird way to introduce that character to me.
Yeah.
Like, what would the people of the MCU that we've been following from the beginning think of this guy coming on TV talking all this? It just feels like he's been there all along. We just haven't seen him. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. I just thought maybe that was him and that was kind of a sneak peek, but I guess we'll see.
It could be. It could be. But I just, I don't know. I got the sense that they just, they liked the actor. They liked the portrayal. They wanted to reuse him. And he's just being, the concept is different in that he's more of like an Alex Jones kind of figure in the MCU now. But well, I guess we'll see.
He's sort of like an Alex Jones like figure in the Spider-Man video game. J. Jonah Jameson is.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I have not played that, so maybe it's, you know, pulling from that.
He's kind of like a narrator in the game. Yeah. Like he does like a podcast and kind of goes along with what's happening in the story as you go. He kind of like remarks on it, and it like pops up while you're swinging around town, and then it kind of moves the narrative along, kind of. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, I'll be very surprised if that's the same Jonah from like the Raimi movies. That would be totally bizarre to me.
All right, so where does, you guys talk about where this could go? Well, let's see what we have in front of us. We have Shang-Chi in September, we have the Eternals in November, and we have Spider-Man. I forgot the subtitle for this one, is in December, but we have two more series apparently this year.
No Way Home.
No Way Home, that's it. No Way Home. So they haven't announced, though, officially when these series are going to take place or when they're going to be on Disney Plus. We have Ms. Marvel, which I'm thinking is going to get wedged sometime between Shang-Chi and the Eternals. Like, I'm thinking like October we'll see that one. And then we have Hawkeye coming up, which Black Widow has, obviously led into somewhat. And that, I think, is going to come in. I don't know. There's not going to be a lot of time between the Eternals and Spider-Man. So I'm thinking maybe it like comes out like a week or two after Spider-Man, or maybe like Black Widow came out like while Loki was going on. Maybe Hawkeye, you know, runs concurrent with Spider-Man. All depends on if anything affects anything. So, Scott, what do you think we're going to see in the MCU? I think Shang-Chi is, you know, where, what could that lead us to? Who knows? Like, what do you think is going to happen coming up?
I think it's going to be the Eternals, as, you know, they said, like, oh, their big tagline is, to be honest, I haven't been blown away with any of the Eternal bullshit, but with them saying, like, what's causing them to act now, and it's the multiverse coming. They didn't blink an eye when Thanos snapped away half the world, half of everything, but now they're coming together. What do you think is coming together? A multiverse of people. And different multiverses and everything. So they got to come together and fight that. It wouldn't surprise me. I don't know who's the bad guy. Might be Black Knight. I don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me if King maybe popped up at the end. I think he's going to be, for maybe phase 4 and 5, the big bad.
So you think we'll see different variants of he showing up at times. Tim.
And sorry, but also What If. I think that's the reason why we get What If, is because all these multiverses.
Right. Yeah, we know we've got What If next.
Are those like canon to the story that we're getting, or like I
think they could be.
I kind of don't understand. Again, maybe.
That's where I think, like I said, that the MCU realizes that the multiverse is a gimmick that is ripe for potential that they're going to exploit. It doesn't have to have like, not everything they do within the multiverse has to have these major long-term consequences, right? A lot of this stuff can be very throwaway, can be very just like, here's a peek at something that could have been. Here's a what if, which I think is what we're going to see. We know that's dropping next, right?
August 11th.
August, okay. So that's how many episodes they said. Have they said how many episodes? we're getting him that. Don't know.
I want to say 11, but I'll verify that.
Oh, wow. That'd be pretty generous. So after that, I think the next show we'll see is going to be Hawkeye, just to kind of ride those tailwinds. Is that the right term? Of Black Widow?
It's 10 episodes, Tim.
10 episodes. Okay, still pretty good. I mean, that's not bad for an animated series.
And then Ms. Marvel is supposed to be the next series after that, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
And I'm
that feels say, early. That feels early for that. I guess I could be wrong, but don't forget though. Don't forget, you guys. Star Wars coming. Star Wars shows are coming back, right? So whether it's Mandalorian or Book of Fett, that's going to be the Obi-Wan. Same. Yeah, isn't that like they're not going to do that at the same time as Marvel stuff? It's all Wednesday these drops, right?
I think you'll see. Yeah, I don't think they're going to put a Marvel and a Star Wars same time. Like, you'll see.
I can't imagine.
I mean, you'll see, like, you know, we've had Marvel and Mighty Ducks go at the same time because those are kind of, I mean, I'm sure there's crossover, but not in the same genre.
I mean,
we had the Monsters at Work show, which I think is really funny. If you're a Monsters, Inc. fan, watch that. Has dropped the last couple of weeks as well on Wednesdays. But, yeah, I can't see them doing two franchise, I guess we'll say.
Right. I think it'll happen eventually because we'll get to a point where there's, like, too much content, but we're just not really there yet, at least in this year. So I think we're just going to run out of Wednesdays ultimately. So whether, you know, Ms. Marvel, Hawkeye, something's getting pushed into next year. So, you know, I don't think Hawkeye would have a lot of multiverse type stuff wrapped into it. Eternals, maybe. We don't know what the plot to Eternals is going to be.
Eternals.
You know, you talk about it, Scott. You mentioned Black Knight. He's going to be in the movie. Like, I think a lot of people have been wondering why the hell is he in that movie, other than there is a comics association with the character Cersei, who's an Eternal. Which, that storyline, that one particular storyline, had some very multiversal consequences. So, Sean, are we getting the Gatherers? Are we getting Proctor in Eternals?
I don't know. I'm not really high on the. I haven't liked the trailers, so I'm kind of like in limbo. Like Shang-Chi, I'm excited for, but I really don't see. I think I'm excited for it because of the karate element. I saw the second trailer in the theater. I liked it. I don't know where this is all going to go. I don't know how Shang-Chi goes into this. I don't know how the Eternals go into this. Hawkeye, I feel like, comes directly out of Black Widow. So the only ones I really feel like right now that I feel like something will come out of what we've seen is Doctor Strange and Spider-Man. So those are the only two that I see anything of the multiverse that I know are potential there. I don't know how the other ones would play into it at this point. Maybe they'll surprise you.
And that would be fine because think about, we got Thanos teased at the end of Avengers, which was phase one.
I'll do it myself.
Yes.
But not paid off until phase three. So you figure we're just in phase four now. If Kang is not paid off until, goodness, phase six, would that be outside of, you know, the norm here for the MCU? Not really.
Yeah. I don't know. So I'd be okay if it was just those two movies and everything else was on its own, but I kind of feel like that's where it's at. I feel like there's dangling, like, different threads going on, but maybe there's a larger story at play, I guess.
You got to figure. You guys got to remember, even within the overall Infinity Saga, you had a ton of just standalone movies that had nothing to do with Infinity Stones or Thanos or anything.
Yeah, even Iron Man 3. You got that.
Even in, like, the lead-up to Infinity War, it was like, no, we're not dealing with it. Yeah, Iron Man 3, like, Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Black Panther. So, yeah, I mean,
Black Panther, Civil War, some of the best movies just had nothing to do with the overall saga.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, Shang-Chi looks cool. You know, the karate stuff. Yeah. Awkwafina's in it, so she's, you know, I think she's great. And
you're in love with Awkwafina.
She's on Andy's screen.
Well, no, she's on like I want to hang out with her train. That's what she's on.
What's an Awkwafina?
What's an Awkwafina? She's an Eternal.
Yes. Oh. No, she's not Eternal.
The water I drink, Awkwafina.
She's neither.
But you know, and also we got that Abomination and mm-hmm. Wang.
Correct.
Yep. Sighting. So who knows what's going to happen there? So yeah, it's very exciting, you know. And also, you know, they do put that little stamp on the end that Loki will come back in season two, the first MCU movie to have a second season. Although we don't know if, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier could come back or not. I don't know if they've told that whole story or if there's more stories to tell. Who knows?
Yeah, they said they're doing a movie.
Captain America 4. Yeah.
Captain America 4. That's what it's called. Yeah.
All right. So lots to look forward to on MCU where, you know, and we'll be here to break it down. You know, we'll talk about the movies on Pop Goes the Movies when those come out, as well as a series that, you know, you'll have the four of us here. You know, we could do What If. We're still in the discussion phase on that, as well as, you know, there's other series, streaming series that we may want to chat about as well. But we'll just stay tuned to the feed and the website and the Facebook page, and we'll let you know. So since this is a season finale, we get to do plugs. So talk about where you can be found, what's going on, social medias. We'll start with you, Sean. What do you got?
At NWA Crack and Roll on Twitter. I will plug the other podcast on this feed that I do with Shiflet, Battlestar in the 25th Century, where we live watch Buck Rogers and Battlestar Galactica for the late 70s. He's my student as we walk along through that. And you can find me on numerous other pods on the wrestling feed. And another pod on the North-South feed that I do with Matt Souza looking at current day impact. So that's where you can find me.
All right. Scott?
Yes, Sean mentioned that. I do Blockbuster Rewind with Eric Eels and yourself, Andy, and on the wrestling feed, PTB and YouTube Roulette with aforementioned Sean, Logan, and Jake Williams. And I can be found on Twitter at Scott_Shiflet.
All right. Tim?
Look, subscribe to our sister feed, Place Me Nation Wrestling. I've got a pair of shows over there. Those are PTB NXT and Talkin' WCW. I also want to give a shout out to our other sister, from another mister, the North South Connection podcast network as well, where I have some presence there doing the 9021 NOSO. Had to stop and pause and make sure I said that correctly. A new podcast with myself and JT Rosero. We've got a guest hopefully every episode. Some episodes may be guestless, but just going chronologically through the OG classic Beverly Hills 90210. Get in on the action now while it's still early. We're just pulling in on episode 5 of season 1, if you can believe it, going back to 1990. A lot of fun stuff there. This is a real passion project of certainly JT and myself. But we go through categories, we go through characters, just have a lot of fun with that podcast. So that's sort of the newest project you can find from me, something I'm having a ton of fun with. And I'd be remiss in not mentioning the Jenny Position as well, the podcast network curated by our friend, my frequent podcast partner, Jennifer Smith. So I have a number of shows over there, but if you want more MCU content, check out The Journey Through Infinity. That's myself, Jenny, the aforementioned JT Rosero, and Scott Criscolo. Another Chrono Watch podcast, I guess, because we're going through chronologically in order all of the films of the MCU. And our most recent edition of that was talking about Spider-Man Homecoming, I do believe.
Yep.
Thought we did a pretty good job there. So figure we're quite some ways along, more than halfway through all the films to date that we've seen in the MCU. So do check that out if you're a fan. We're going to keep it going for as long as they're making these movies, I assume. So we're going to try to stay on top of it. We'll probably get to a point of lapping them, you know, in terms of these release schedules as we catch up. But do check that out, The Journey Through Infinity on the Jenny Position. And follow me on social media. I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-68 on Twitter.
All right,
that should do it for me.
All right. So as for me, I have since I kind of run this place, I have a lot of shows here on this feed. I'm making Mount Rushmore, which maybe going from biweekly to monthly. We'll be checking that out. So check, keep, stay tuned for that. Pop Goes the Movies pops up whenever we have a new movie to talk about. We have also Year in Pop. That's about every 6 weeks. That's myself and Scott Criscolo. We have a new guest in the last episode was Sean and Peter Winston. So look for 91 to come out probably around the end of the summer. We also have, for me, Trivia Night's over. So I hope you, if you didn't listen, go back and listen to the entire season. It was a fun one. We have also Pop Goes the Classics Disney. That is the Disney retrospective series. The next episode is Robin Hood. That will be coming out probably sometime next week, as well as the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, multi-potential podcast. Miranda and I ran into some scheduling issues, so we're hoping to get episode 4 out to your very ears soon. As well as Laughing Theater, we'll be back soon with new watches and a brand new podcast series, Blockbuster Rewatch, which I will be doing partially at times. Will be just pods. At other times, we'll be on Stream Lounge. And part of that podcast series, I'm going to do a rewatch of all the MCU films, starting with 2008's Iron Man. And if you are listening to this episode the day it drops, which is Wednesday afternoon, join us tonight on Stream Lounge at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. That is myself and our very own Tim Capel. The two of us will be live watching Iron Man, and you could watch along with us and comment. And you can, you know, in a little chat feature they have on the Stream Lounge, interact with us. If you have questions, comments, you know, we will answer them. We will react to you. So, yeah, be part of it. It's interactive. That's what we love about this, the Stream Lounge. And I've done one. I did Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl with Miranda. That was a lot of fun. This is Tim's first time giving it a try. So I expect it to be a great time, though. And if you can't be with us tonight, if you're listening to this again, day it drops, it'll be up there for you to watch at any time. Just go to Stream Lounge and look for Tim under Cyke68, as well as myself as Blockbuster Rewatch. I have a couple of names on there, but I've tried to keep, you know, Laughing Theater and Blockbuster Rewatch separate, since they are kind of different genres of movies. So check that out, and we hope a lot of people like it. So yeah, I'm going to be doing the entire MCU with all different guests, co-hosts. So check that out, and they'll all be released later on as pods in audio only form, if that is your listening preference. So I want to thank all you gentlemen once again for getting together and doing yet another season/series of Disney Plus Marvel here. And I look forward to our next one, whichever that may be, whether it is What if it is Miss Marvel, if it is Hawkeye, who knows, you know, what else we have out there. But if it's streaming and it's something in the nerd geek culture, we will be breaking it down on Pop Goes to the Couch. For Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Capel, I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us for Loki, and we'll check you out on the next series. Take care.